Good morning.
Good morning.
This is House Fisheries Committee, and we will come to order at 10:02 a.m. in room 120. Welcome, everyone, and please remember to silence your phones. Today is Tuesday, February 28, 2017, and members present are Representative Tarr, Representative Fansler, Representative Newman, Representative Chenault, and myself, Chair Stutes. Let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. We are also joined by Caitlin Ellis from House Records, Somers Cole from the LIO, and of course, my Fisheries Committee aide, Reed Harris. Today we have two bills on the agenda, HJR 12, opposing genetically engineered salmon by Representative Tarr, and House Bill 107, Fish Enhancement Permits by Representative Tallarico. And welcome Representative Christ Tompkins, who has just joined us. First up is HJR 12, and if the sponsor would please put herself on the record and begin.
Good morning, Chairwoman Stutes. Thank you so much for the opportunity to present on HJR 12. I'm Representative Garen Tarr from Anchorage.
Good morning, Fisheries Committee. My name is Thatcher Brower, and I'm staff to Representative Tarr.
So this might look familiar to some people. This has been a perennial issue for me, and I'm glad that we're bringing this forward. Just having had our senior senator and our junior senator in town, I did get to talk with Senator Murkowski, and she's continuing her work in Washington, D.C. And our work here at the state level is to help support our congressional delegation in their actions. Why the need for this resolution, just as some reminder background information for new folks, that in November of 2015, the FDA allowed genetically modified salmon. It's the first time, and why I am so strongly opposed to it, that an animal has been approved for human consumption. What is problematic is part of the approval process was that it was done through what's called the veterinary drug proposals, and you know, people really question whether that was the appropriate way to consider this use of technology, since it is something that would be for human consumption. That would traditionally be through a different regulatory route, so that in itself makes it very unique. And if folks aren't familiar, the genetically modified salmon that's been approved by the FDA is grown using two different species and adding their DNA to the Atlantic salmon. The ocean pout, which is the one on the left, is an eel-like fish. That one offers the continuous growth because of what, it, you know, it's sort of naturally occurring life cycle. And then on the right, the Chinook salmon, and that one was selected for its size. So what you get when you have the genetically modified fish is you have something that makes it grow bigger and faster. And so you can see in the picture here on the right sort of how they compare at this, you know, 18-month stage to farm salmon to genetically modified salmon. And so the idea is, you know, to get something that grows to full size twice as fast.
And I'd like to note Representative Eastman has just joined us.
The genetically modified salmon, and if you look at the website for the company who's proposed this, this was never really about sustainability. This has always just been about profit, right, as you think about just growing a product that would be, you know, grow faster and be larger, you know, and you think of it as a protein source. And you can see from, you know, the way they describe it, the faster growing would shorten production cycles by half and drastically reduce feed costs so that it's economically viable. So, you know, we have to question you know, the difference between what's, you know, healthy for an ecosystem versus what is an economic opportunity. So when we think of salmon, this is what we think of here in Alaska. But this is what genetically modified salmon looks like. So it's grown in these sort of warehouse industrial type settings with these land-based pens. This proposal includes making the genetically modified salmon fish eggs on Prince Edward Island in Canada, then grown to size in Panama, and then shipped back to the U.S. for sales. So it's three different countries, and that's because individuals have so strongly opposed these proposals that the company, you know, has not been able to, you know, find a place. For example, you know, in the United States, nobody wants them to be grown here. So some of the concerns about genetically modified salmon, the threats to wild salmon, risks to human health, and risks to the state economy. And so just looking at why the concern about threats to wild salmon, of course, escapement is always an issue. If you follow the issues with farm salmon, you know, you'll see that there, you know, our Department of Fish and Game, for example, puts out announcements to commercial fishermen to, you know, please report if they catch any farm salmon, and there have been plenty of reports. And when we look at, for example, the site here on Prince Edward Island, where the Aqua Bounty eggs would be produced, I visited this location myself, was invited by some Prince Edward Island residents that don't want their island that is known for tourism to be known as the home of the frankenfish, and they're very concerned because now when you know Google Prince Edward Island, that's what comes up about their communities rather than this beautiful place for tourists. I visited the Aqua Bounty site right there. You can see, you know, it's right on the bay, and then goes out basically in that, you know, what becomes the St. Lawrence Seaway and then out into the Atlantic Ocean. And so there's concerns about, you know, the escapement and that location and proximity to a water body. These are just some photos when I went and did the visit. The top one is the Aqua Bounty facility. Not very high tech in nature, doesn't give you a lot high level of confidence. The bottom picture is meeting with their premier for Prince Edward Island, and so that's the, you know, equivalent of their governor, and asking them to weigh in on this proposal. There were several groups actually from that area that sent in comments to the US FDA and you know, expressed their opposition to the proposal. When we talk about the threats to wild salmon, you know, and this has been shown again with farm salmon, that, you know, the spread of disease. What's really interesting and concerning about the genetically modified salmon is this part about being more aggressive and being able to outcompete the wild salmon. There have been some studies, and here are just some screenshots of the report about these different studies, but what was alarming is when the scientists did this research, and you can see sort of the headline at the bottom right there, the genetically modified salmon can breed with trout and harm ecosystem. And so what they found was that they could breed, and what would happen is the new fish would be able to outcompete both the genetically modified salmon and the wild relative. And so, you know, by having that that new, you know, more aggressive fish could be very damaging to natural ecosystems. When we talk about risks to human health, this is where we come back to the way this proposal was approved. So right now, no long-term studies have been done about whether this, you know, is a safe product for human consumption. When the FDA, again, you know, evaluated this, they did it through the veterinary drug testing, you know, pathway, not for the human consumption. And then risk to state's economy. If we look back to what happened when farm salmon came on, there was a dramatic drop in price for Alaska wild salmon. And, you know, that's when the state responded. We created the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. We've invested tremendously in branding our Alaska wild salmon and have been very successful in doing so. It's a widely recognized brand. And if you talk to our ASME marketing folks, it's a real success story. It's made it like Kobe beef, you know, as far as when individuals look for a protein source, if they know it's wild Alaska salmon, they know it's healthy, and that creates a lot of value. And then we can't forget the impact to, you know, jobs. It's our largest private sector employer. So we are not alone in opposing this. Our congressional delegation has stood, you know, strong in opposing genetically modified salmon. All of them have come out. Senator Murkowski has been the leader now for a few years, and I really, really support her efforts. What her office told me is she would be introducing another bill very soon. And so, you know, we're in contact with her and her staff. More than 40 members of Congress, and this may need to be updated. What was interesting, when the FDA had the comment period open, more than 1.5 million comments from around the country, you know, that's record setting in terms of the number of people who weighed in. And if you know anything about sort of genetically modified foods and labeling, you know, more than 90% of Americans support labeling of genetically modified foods. So there's, you know, a movement, in our country and across the world to question whether these are safe food products. And people, if you've watched what's happening in Alaska with, you know, farmers markets and a lot of interest in agriculture, people are really interested in knowing more about where their food comes from and knowing that it's healthy. We've been really pleased. Major retailers like Costco have announced that they will not sell genetically modified salmon, and they're joined by major retailers all over the country. There's also international opposition. Some of those same individuals that I, you know, worked with before have also engaged in lawsuits. And, you know, they're concerned they should have wild salmon populations on the Atlantic side of things. You know, that's why they look to Alaska as a leader in sustainability, because a lot of those populations have been really damaged. But, you know, on the Pacific side of things, you see, there's a lot of, for example, the dam removal projects, you know, to try and restore, you know, traditional fish passage areas. So people are really, you know, working hard to support and sustain wild salmon populations. And, you know, I think that's why you see a lot of this international opposition. In the United States.
Excuse me. Yes. Brief it is. Continue. Thank you.
Okay. We're almost wrapped up here, but just sort of the most recent update, there's also a lawsuit filed in the United States. You know, we're joined by legislators and folks that I've worked with through PENWAR, for example, on the West Coast. There's, you know, opposition, and if you follow these genetically modified issues, you know, Canada, Washington, and Oregon have all had ballot initiatives about, you know, different things, whether it's labeling or regulation. Many communities at a local level have actually passed ordinances in opposition to genetically modified foods. So in March of last year, there was a lawsuit filed. Sort of the most recent update is that lawsuit went to court on Election Day, and I don't believe a judgment has been issued in that lawsuit. I think that's, you know, where they finally went before the court and made arguments. So I'm watching that, and, you know, that might change things. But in the meantime, you know, I think because the process wasn't done properly to consider this as a food source for humans, and because there's unanswered questions about the ecological impacts and reasons to be concerned about that, and as Alaskans, because salmon is so important to our culture, to our tradition, to our communities, to our health, that we should stand together as we have in the past and say no and stand together in opposition of genetically modified salmon. Thank you, Madam Chairwoman.
Thank you. Thank you. Are there any questions from this committee or the representative? Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Tarr, after kind of listening to your opening statements, I'm going to assume, let there be light, now I can read, that there are that this deals with just genetically modified fish and no other products?
Through the chair, Representative Chenault, yes, that is correct.
Madam Chair, I'm just trying to go through here. In the resolution, you state that more than 2 million Americans are opposed to the United States FDA's approval, but I thought you just said that about 1.5 million people had written testimony in the latest round of looking at this proposal.
Through the chair, Representative Chenault, I think one of the numbers reflects the individual comments received, and then some of them came in the form of petitions that were signed by many individuals, but just sort of registered as a single comment, but that's the represents the number of individuals.
And Madam Chairman, if I may, and it's probably just because I'm not real smart when it comes to how fish are raised and born in hatcheries, but right now their system is that they incubate eggs on Prince Edward Island, and then did you say they move them to Panama for rearing?
Through the chair, Representative Chenault, that is the proposal that's been approved. It requires the three countries' involvement, the eggs in one location, the growing the fish in Panama, and then for sale in the United States.
Okay, and Madam Chairman, if I may, is there anyone here that, do you have anyone, or is there anyone that can really talk to me about what danger an egg poses? Let's say it, you know, because the conversation is that we're worried about these eggs growing into bigger fish and destroying the what might be left of the Atlantic salmon. And I'm just curious as to most time eggs are not released into the wild and grown. So I would just be curious as to how the concern is about the facility being on Prince Edward Island and then the movement of eggs to Panama and then back to the U.S. as fish.
Through the chair, you know, I think there's concern because that's early stage development and people don't want, you know, interbreeding with any wild populations. When you look at Panama, I think there's concern because, you know, I don't know that all Americans feel like their environmental regulations would be the same, you know, standard that we might have in the United States. And, you know, I know there are individuals there that have concerns. Is the likelihood of escapement low? Probably because of the different measures that have taken place. And I don't, you know, want to suggest otherwise. I mean, or that they're sort of negligent in that behavior. However, the threat is real, you know, that if there were interbreeding. And what is interesting, that McGill study that I hearken back to, that came out sort of right after the comment period closed for comments about, you know, this proposal. And I actually wrote to the FDA and asked them, you know, to please consider this new research report. And you know, that was sort of, you know, changed, I would say, the dynamic in terms of that conversation once that research showed that interbreeding occurred and how problematic that was.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. We may have other questions, but all.
Representative Eastman.
Yes, through the chair. I'm wondering if the sponsor would be amiable to adding a word to the resolution. And it would appear on page 3, line 2, and I need to understand what the intent from the sponsor is to make sure that I'm understanding. But currently, the resolution asks Congress to enact legislation that requires prominently labeling genetically engineered products. And I'm wondering if you would be agreeable to adding the word salmon so that it would be asking Congress to enact legislation that requires prominently labeling genetically engineered salmon products. And I would see genetically engineered products is somewhat difficult to define. But I think if we kept to salmon, I think that we might get more support.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, that's a great suggestion and question and something we've considered in the past. One of the sort of challenges in that is that when Congress has considered legislation in the past, you know, there's been efforts to sort of differentiate for the labeling, for example, on the part of Senator Murkowski. You know, she's been very specific about labeling of genetically engineered salmon products. However, because there have been efforts through Congress to do labeling more broadly, it's sort of been suggested that, you know, you could sort of go one of two ways with that because, you know, they might look at an entire package. And this is, I guess, reflecting that. However, you know, this resolution is supposed to be specific to salmon. And so I don't, you know, I don't have a problem with that. It's just more reflective of some of the legislation that's been under consideration. And, in fact, one of the measures that was passed by Congress last summer that, you know, dealt with some provisions related to this.
Follow up.
Representative Eastman.
Just going back to the previous question that was asked. So if you have a fertilized salmon egg that somehow escapes the facility on Prince Edward Island, is there is there any reason why that salmon egg wouldn't naturally grow and result in a salmon, or is there something about the way the engineering of the, you know, genetics is such that that would be less likely to happen? I just wanted to flesh out that question a little bit more.
Well, through the chair, Representative Eastman, their specific, sort of the way the proposal was written was specific to certain life stages, and that's what's been approved by the FDA. Their, you know, facilities, I imagine, you know, they have more than just the fish that they're going to, the eggs that are going to be used for this growing in the facility, as was explained to me by some of the folks that live there. And that's sort of their concern. If you look at the Aqua Bounty website, although it's changed to not reflect this anymore, but, you know, they have proposals and are interested in proposals for several other species. And I think there's just a lack of confidence in the work that they're doing, and people want to take every precautionary measure. And, you know, that may mean being more precautionary than necessary, but I think, you know, for those individuals that I was able to see and work with, that was their position.
Mm-hmm. Follow up,
Representative Eastman.
I appreciate that. I'm just looking at the concern that's already been voiced from the public, and based on that concern alone, it would seem to me that placing the location there on Prince Edward Island near a water body is sort of not really receptive of that concern. I would probably have wanted to try and put it somewhere in Kansas or someplace like that away from water, but that's just me.
I represent, through the chair, Representative Eastman, I totally agree. And in fact, there was, this company is actually a Massachusetts-based company, and at one point they wanted to put a facility there, and the local community just completely said no. And so that's what led them to seek somewhere else. And I think I, you know, only mention that in the sense that, you know, if you're regulating a product and it's sort of the production and how it comes to be, you know, having three countries involved, I think makes that just a bit more challenging than, you know, for example, if it was, you know, all within the U.S. where we could feel more comfortable that, you know, we knew what was going on.
Thank you. Any other comments? Representative Eastman, did you want to put forth a conceptual amendment?
My conceptual amendment would just be to make sure that we're dealing with just genetically engineered salmon products, because I know that there's various ways of defining genetically engineered, and I think that would open the resolution up to more potential criticism that I think is good.
Thank you, and I'll object for discussion.
And, Madam Chair, I'm not opposed to that. However, I think what we would want to say is genetically engineered salmon or salmon products, just to be clear that we were talking about both just, you know, a fish fillet and if there were a, you know, sort of value-added product made with that.
I think the sponsor was speaking exactly my mind.
Okay. Any other comments? I will remove my objection. Are there other objections? Seeing none, we will adopt Representative Eastman's amendment. Are there any other comments from this committee? Representative Chenault.
Madam Chairman, just so the record's clear, we will adopt Representative Eastman's amendment with Representative Starr's addition of salmon products.
Salmon or salmon products.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other comments from this committee? Seeing none, I will open up public testimony. Do we have anyone here? Oh, do we have anyone here that would like to testify on this? And I see no one online, so I will close public testimony. Any further comments from this committee? Representative Christ Tompkins.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm familiar subject matter from past legislatures, but as expressed in the past, wanted to pass on appreciation for advocating on this issue, and it's certainly something that I think all of Coastal Alaska is pretty engaged on and concerned about, and appreciative that there's action being taken on this, especially sort of really, you know, hoofing it out to ground zero, if you will. So I'm glad this is moving forward.
Thank you. Any other comments? Seeing none, I will entertain a motion. Representative Bansler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move that House Joint Resolution 1230-LS0276A, as amended, move from this committee with attached fiscal note.
Seeing no objections, we will move this bill from committee. We will take a brief at ease. We'll come back on record. Next is House Bill 107, Fish Enhancement Permits. If the sponsor would please come forward and place himself on the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Thank you for having us here today. I am Dave Tallarico. I'm the representative for House District 6, and I'll just say that's a fair portion of eastern Alaska. But I really do appreciate the opportunity this morning, Madam Chair and committee members, to present the bill. And I know that we have quite a few people that are part of our invited testimony, so I will make this reasonably short, Madam Chair, and we'll get on to, I think, people that are probably smarter and more articulate than I am. But once again, thank you very much this morning. And the first thing I will start out with, which isn't part of my notes, there are no blended species allowed in this bill, which I think is pretty important, I think. So House Bill 107 is a fish fertilization enhancement bill, and the permit described in this bill could boost fish egg fertilization rates from 5% in nature to 95% through incubation. Fish eggs would be collected, fertilized, incubated, hatched, and released back in the same water as unfed fry. So in other words, when these fish, whatever body of water these fish come out of, they go right back into the same water. That's as natural as we can possibly make them, in my opinion, doing them as a fry and release them in the water they came out of. Fish incubation certainly is not new, and we've been doing it for over 40 years in many areas. The bill would also clean things up by outlining these permit requirements in statute. The bill would open up fish fertilization enhancement projects as a collaborative effort with the private sector under the department, and this is all under the auspices of the Department of Fish and Game. And one of the questions that I've always been asked is, can you just do this in a bucket in your garage? As you've probably seen in the bill, there are quite a few requirements and quite a few things to do. These permits, I don't believe, would be that easy to obtain. And there's also a data requirement reporting back to Fish and Game later. So it's just not I'll go in and grab a permit and a report. There are some requirements for the permittee to accomplish the complete task. So with that, Madam Chair, if I could, I will turn this over to my aide, Mr. Verhagen. He'll introduce himself and give you some more information, if that's okay with you.
Thank you, Representative Tallarico.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Elijah Verhagen, staff to Representative Tallarico. So the in statute, AS 1605050, bullet 5, it's the duties of the commissioner. And one of his duties is to propagate fish and fish populations. And so that the department has taken that duty seriously and done a great job, and have produced similar fish fertilization enhancement permits that are currently available under educational purposes for schools and universities, higher education, and then under science research permits. And that is open up to tribes through cooperative agreements with the department, as well as governmental entities, cities, et cetera, boroughs. And so and various other entities through cooperative agreements. So what this bill would do is, however, none of those educational or science permits that are currently given are outlined in statute. And so what this bill is doing is, under the same high level of management and scrutiny by the department, it would be outlining a fish fertilization enhancement permit in statute. So on page 2 and 3, and I'm not going to go through it bullet by bullet, but there's a whole wealth of information that an applicant corporation, qualified individual, which is all defined on page 5 of what that entails, would have to fill out this application, the reasons why they're doing this, what type of fish they're collecting, how many fish they plan to collect, the area that they've worked through, agreements with the local shareholders, etc., in the river that they plan to do this. There's a whole bunch of information that, again, is already almost the exact same. We've been working with the department on this. Almost the exact same stuff is required for these educational and science purposes. However, in this bill, it would open this up to people instead of having to, which, again, the department's been great to work with, to be able to do this under science and education. This would allow people to qualified people and corporations to get such a permit simply because they need more fish. A lot of the rivers up in the interior where our District 6 is, the department doesn't have the resources. They don't do fish counts in many of the rivers. There's not escapement goals, etc., but yet the locals can definitely tell you that there's a lot less fish now than there were years ago. And so this application or this permit is not going to be necessarily easy. It's not just going to be open up to everyone to get. As we can see through this bill, all of the conditions, it would actually be quite difficult. And I've been telling people, I've been studying and working with a lot of the people online who are the experts that we're going to hear from in just a bit. I've been working for weeks on this, and yet I still would probably not qualify to get one of these permits. And yet I've learned a lot about fish fertilization enhancement, and I think it's a great potential. As Representative Tallarico had mentioned, it is a natural fish propagation process, to where we aren't farming fish or anything like that. You're simply boosting the fertilization rate from 5% in nature up to about roughly 95% is what the existing organizations that have been doing this find that they can get up to. Then you're releasing them back into the water as unfed fish. They have about a 10-day window to where they're emergent fry to get them back into the water, the same watershed. And so they're about as natural as possible. I think we can all agree that that's what we want, is natural salmon, and we do want to boost our salmon populations and maximize our resource as stated in the in our Constitution. So with that, I will open it up, or turn it back to you, of course, open it up for questions or anything like that.
Thank you. Are there any questions from this committee? Seeing none, I will then open it up for public testimony. Is there anyone here in-house that would like to testify on this? Seeing none, I will go to the Glen Allen LIO, Bruce Kane. Mr. Kane?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Bruce Kane, and I appreciate the opportunity to comment this morning. Just a little introduction of myself. I live in Glen Allen, Alaska, and I work for Ottman Incorporated as a special projects manager. I also serve on the board of directors for the Prince William Sound Aquaculture Corporation, and I serve as president of the Copper Valley Chamber of Commerce. I will not be representing any of these organizations today, but will be speaking on my own behalf as a private citizen. I like this bill. I like this idea. And maybe I'll just kind of go back to 1971. I'll be 60 years old next month. I was 14 years old in 1971. And I was working in Juneau on the docks in Auk Bay. It was a little different. I think they call it Fisherman's Bend now. Neil Taylor owned it then. It was called Taylor's Marina. And we operated a little differently than today. There was a fish buying station there, and we most of our business was serving a small hand troll and fleet of commercial fishermen. It was before limited entry, it was before the 200-mile limit, and it was before there were any hatchery programs. And there also were no fish. And I was 14 years old, and I was standing on the dock, and I bought a boat came in, and it was Det Caesar. He was Nile Caesar's dad. Maybe some of you know him or knew him. And he'd been fishing all week. He had a coho salmon, he had a humpy, and he had a chum salmon. He sold them. And I think the total came out to about $23 for those fish. It was $1.10 a pound for cohos. That was most of the money came from that. And he put 100 gallons of diesel fuel in his boat, and it was about $30 a gallon for diesel fuel. So he put about $30 worth of diesel fuel in his boat. And I said, okay, well, it's about $30 for the fuel. And he said, well, take it out of the fish, like he'd always done. And I said, well, there wasn't enough money from the fish to pay for the fuel. And he was about 70 years old then, a little bit older than I am today. And he stood there and he looked at me, and then he looked at his boat, and he thought about his family, and he started to cry. So here I'm, a 14-year-old kid standing on the dock trying to, comfort a 70-year-old man that was crying because he'd been out fishing all week and didn't even have enough money to pay for fuel to go back out. And, kind of did something to me in my life about making sure that we could do something to improve our fish. And we did a lot. We did the 200-mile limit. We put the Fred division in and built the hatchery system. And we did limited entry, which required a constitutional amendment. And if you would have told me back then that in the 21st century there would be so many fish in the Alaska that people would actually be worried about the effects of hatcheries, I couldn't have imagined any of that actually occurring. So anyway, I've been living in Glen Allen, been on the Copper Basin for many years. I've participated in the commercial fishery. I've never had a limited entry permit, but I've worked on the boats just almost as a hobby, just going out with people that had permits. I've participated in the personal use fishery. I've sport fished, and I have a subsistence fish wheel. I've fished in all the fisheries on the Copper River. And the one thing that we have here that has been a very big blessing is we have the Gulkana hatchery, which is it runs these incubation boxes that are, I think, the purpose of this bill is to be able to get people to license to operate a small one or two box facility. That facility was built by, created by a state biologist, Ken Roberson. And he built it with a bunch of donated fish totes, a donated dump truck load of gravel, and I think a pickup truck or two full of plywood that they actually bought.
Mr. Kane, I know you were speaking in support of this bill, but if you could sum it up, we would appreciate it.
Okay. Anyway, that is now one of a large sockeye facility, and it keeps our river healthy. This year we're going to be experiencing our king salmon run on the Copper River is going to be very low, and we're going to have restrictions that we've never seen before. So I know that we've had a very good result with this system on the Copper River for many years, since the 70s, and it's done a good job, and I'd encourage the committee to look favorably on this bill. I think there are a lot of places in our tributaries on our river where we've lost salmon because of the highway construction and perch culverts or other reasons where we could use this system to restore small discrete populations, and I certainly think it would be a good thing to try on the Yukon River.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Kane, and we certainly do appreciate your testimony. Are there any questions from this committee for Mr. Kane? Seeing none. Thank you again, Mr. Kane. We will now go to Eric Gebhardt in Nenana.
Good morning, Chair.
Mr. Gebhardt?
Hi, my name is Eric Gebhardt. Thank you for allowing me to testify. I am the superintendent of the Nenana City School District. I am in my ninth year here. Prior to being in Nenana, I spent 8 years in CAIC. I called to speak in support of House Bill 107. We have, in CAIC, we did some work like this before, and it was very educational, and we actually had plans this spring to do it this fall here in Nenana, but we just didn't start soon enough to get it done this year. We're hoping to be able to do it in the years to come. We do have the capacity through the educational permit to do this, but with the state of things, you know, for schools and for all of us in Alaska, I would welcome this bill because it would encourage lots of people to get involved with this, and if we had other qualified organizations that were able and desiring to get involved with this on the local level, then we could certainly add the educational component to that. And I think we could have some real good partnerships across the state between education and the science and the fisheries, and it would as an educational institution, and as a small city school district, any impact we have would be relatively small, but in partnership with others who were looking at increasing fish populations, I think, you know, the impact could be much greater, not only on the fish, but on the kind of education we would be able to offer along with that, and teaching our kids and helping something like this to be sustained into the future. So I am in support of HB 107.
Thank you kindly. Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions for Mr. Gebhardt?
Yes. If I may, through the chair.
Identify yourself, please.
Yes, for the record, Elijah Verhagen, staff to represent Tallarico. We're really excited that one of our school superintendents, Eric Gebhardt, is already, you know, working towards this. He's already had experience doing this in CAIC, and he's looking to do that with one of our school districts. We're excited for the kids in class to be able to participate in the incubation and of these fertilization of these eggs, and then see it through the whole process. And the young minds, you know, their excitement and the potential that can stem from this, we would hope it'll take a couple years, you know, to get going. But the hope is that they would then, you know, find this really fascinating, exciting, have the experience, and then when they graduate in high school, go into to get degrees in biology, etc., and maybe work for Department of Fish and Game, or have the qualifications to be hired on by tribes and other organizations looking to do this as someone with experience who's already been helping with fish propagation. And so we're excited for the educational opportunities to then move into the private sector.
Thank you, Mr. Verhagen. We'll continue on with our public testimony. We have, I would like to mention online, we have Alpheus Bullard from Legislative Legal, in case there are any questions. And we also, I see we have Brian Ashton for questions. Or, Mr. Ashton, did you want to testify? Mr. Ashton?
Sorry, I was waiting to unmute my phone. I'm basically here to answer any questions people may have on this.
And what is your affiliation, please?
I was asked, at the request of Representative Tallarico, I was asked to help in collaboration with ABFNG to draft this bill.
Okay, so you're available for questions.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. We'll go to Gary Martinick from Florida. Mr. Martinick?
Yes, this is Gary Martinick. I'm the retired hatchery manager, recently retired hatchery manager from Gulfcana Hatchery. Have basically 13 years with the state of Alaska and 20 years on aquaculture, and I don't have to answer any questions I have regarding enhancement.
And did you wish to testify?
I'm just here to answer questions if anybody has any.
Okay, we appreciate that. Thank you. How about Mr. Mayo from Fairbanks?
Yes, I'm here, Madam Chair.
If you'd identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, please, and then begin your testimony.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Will Mayo. I am employed by the Panama Chiefs Conference based in Fairbanks, and we are a consortium of rural communities, tribes, who created the organization as an advocacy arm and the service provider. So my testimony is in favor of HB 107. I spend a lot of time on the Yukon River in my boat, and in recent years our primary eating fish was is the king salmon, and the runs were so depleted that we weren't permitted to have openings. Last year we did, and the year before a very small one, so it's coming out. But it, as I would pass the fish camps on the river, there would be no activity, no people, no boats. And each one I passed would reminded me of a school closure, because it's where our children learn from early age how to live that life. So we want to help maintain robust wild salmon stocks, and that is why TCC wants to be involved. And we do employ a scientific program that we want to develop our capacity to address future needs. As resources diminish, the people fall back more and more and are always dependent on their rural economies. And the rural economies are a wild resource economy. And so when that is threatened, it's a very deep source of anxiety for the people. Discrete salmon populations need assistance in most regions of the state. We need a permit process that is tailored to restoring wild salmon populations, and that just doesn't exist today. We applaud what ADF&G does to try to make the current permits work, but they don't fit the need or the task of restoring wild salmon. So current permits, they're just designed for a research and education. They're limited. Or you have the conventional hatcheries, and those are very cumbersome, and they don't at all fit what we would like to do and develop. So HB 107 creates a process for restoring our wild salmon. It allows Alaskan stakeholders, the Fish and Game Department, to do restoration of the discrete subpopulations of wild salmon, with a clear oversight by the department, with guidelines of based on good science and practices that are time proven. Finally, HB 107 is a conservative approach to assure that wild salmon are kept wild. So these are not pen-fed fish. They are not conventional hatchery fish. And they are returned to their river of origin. So HB 107 speaks to the importance of collaboration, data collection, and education within the process of restoration of our wild salmon stock. So in closing, we find it necessary, this bill is necessary to fill a niche that currently is not provided for. And though we have tried to cobble something together using current permits, we find that that one day we may get approved and another day we may not. This bill changes that and allows us to proceed with a program to assist wild stocks. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions from this committee for Mr. Mayo? Seeing none, we will go to Nancy Hillstrand in Kachemak.
Yes, hello, my name is Nancy Hillstrand, and I'm a fish processor, but I have 21 years as a fish culturist of 5 species of salmon and 2 species of trout, and I oppose House Bill 107. I know it's well-intentioned, but yes, we can go wrong with enhancement, and yes, we have gone wrong with enhancement multiple times. This is a dangerous bill for our wild spawning salmon resource, and it's not because of certain people handling the fish, it's who knows how many people are with no oversight. ADF&G doesn't have the money to do the work, the proper oversight that would need to happen with a bill of this magnitude. And the simple act of just adding fish has consequences. This House Bill 107 is a Band-Aid approach to underlying symptoms affecting distinct stocks. In the sponsor's statement, I feel lies part of the problem. He says, although the Department of Fish and Game is currently not counting the fish populations in many rivers in our interior districts, such as Nenana, Panana, and upper Yukon rivers, that's what we need. We need more focus up there, what is going on, and also to get the Board of Fish on board to make sure they know what's going on. Chinook in the last couple of years have been slowly rebounding. This is symptom in this is the North Pacific Management Council, which has placed caps on the huge bycatch of Chinook in the Bering Sea. North Pacific Management Council stated the majority, 64% of Chinook salmon bycatch in the Bering Sea is from aggregate coastal western Alaska stock, which includes rivers from Norton Sound to Bristol Bay, including Yukon and Kuskokwim. These are symptoms. We have multiple symptoms causing problems with our salmon. Now we have some bycatch caps that seems to be helping because they seem to be rebounding. We need to start watching these upper tributaries, these distinct stocks, and taking care of our wild fish before we start altering them with any type of enhancement. Being a fish culturist, I'm very concerned about this because I did watch how the hatcheries grew from something that was considered an enhancement to a factory production. And it has cost this state just millions and millions of dollars, and I fear that we need to slow down, really look at the habitat, find out why Fish and Game is not looking closer at the habitat, and also at the food-web interactions, because we don't need a Band-Aid. We need to look at the symptoms, and I thank you very much for listening to my testimony.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Hillstrand? Seeing none, we will go to Pete Valesco in Homer.
Yeah, I'm here.
If you'd identify yourself and your affiliation and begin your testimony, please.
Yeah, my name is Peter Valesco, and I'm representing myself.
Thank you. Begin your testimony.
Okay. First off, I know Nancy real well. We're good friends. And she brings up some good points. However, I'm going to support House Bill 107. I sent in to the committee, I don't know if you got a chance to look at it, a more detailed outline of my work experience and where I worked. But I'm going to kind of shorten that now in case there's any questions. But I started work with the Department of Fish and Game in 1976 in Homer at the Tucker Bay Hatchery. And when that was turned over to Cook Inlet Aquaculture Association, I was transferred to Nome. And they were having some severe problems with their chum salmon. And I was sent there specifically to test in-stream incubation boxes and see what the feasibility was for maybe putting them on area streams to help rebuild the run. So from 1991 to 1997, I worked in Nome with the Fisheries Rehabilitation Enhancement Division. and it's better known as the Fred Division. And my job was to try to implement small-scale salmon restoration enhancement projects for 15 villages in the Norton Sound area, including educational programs in as many schools as I could. And Nome had a very active high school incubation project going on for several years while I was in Nome. And in 1993-1994, just as a brief review, due to ADF&G budget cuts, the Fred Division, which was the division doing exactly what I think 107 can do now, was combined into ComFish, and as a result, at least where I was, salmon restoration and enhancement projects became very low priority and basically were abandoned, at least in Nome. There was no interest in ComFish in the work that I was doing once we were combined with the ComFish division. And unfortunately, as the need for such projects were real and the people wanted to help see them continue, I believe that need still exists today. The disappearance of the Fred Division, I believe, left a void not readily filled by the private nonprofit aquaculture associations, nor with the AD&G ComFish Division. The PNPs are in the business of producing large numbers of fish, primarily for the commercial fishermen located mainly along the coast, while the ComFish Division focuses on managing the fisheries as opposed to producing fish. That being the case, the question I would like to answer, who's out there to assist the more rural villages who might want help increasing salmon opportunities in those areas? I believe House Bill 107 just might be a step in the right direction. And then if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them while I'm still here, but I got to hit the road here pretty soon. But just to summarize, I was doing the kind of work that I believe that House Bill 107 was going to do in Nome, and all the villages I went to were very enthusiastic, very helpful, and provided me a lot of good information. Unfortunately, if you're going to check the feasibility on those chum salmon I was doing, you got to complete the experiment. Unfortunately, when Fred Division was combined with ComFish, they weren't interested anymore. And so I never was able to finish the project. But those boxes did produce salmon. I got as high as 70% on one incubator. I was not there when fish were coming back, so I have no idea. But if you're going to have an experiment, you got to go through it more than one life cycle to see if it's working or not. And thank you for the opportunity to testify. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Velsko. Is there anyone from this committee that would like to ask him any questions? Thank you very much. Seeing no committee member with any questions, we appreciate your testimony. I have no other testifiers online, and there is no one else in-house that would like to testify. If you would like to testify, please come forward and state your name for the record.
Chairman. Yeah, my name is Mike Mann. I am only.
And your affiliation? Okay, thank you.
And I'm no longer a board member at DIPAC Hatchery, which I was for 10 years, and no longer a member of, president of United Southeast Gillnet of Fishermen, you know, which I was the second president at the early start. So I've only been fishing for about 55 years as a commercial fisherman throughout Southeast Bristol Bay, Cook Inlet, and, down south and over in Hawaii. I support this bill, and for various reasons, because right now, as of this year and this upcoming season, we're very supportive on some of these actions that have been done by DIPAC and NSRA, and it's proved that what is going to be done with these other communities, they can prove that they're doing it correctly, you know, with the help of these people. And basically from hatchery people, you know, because they're very smart and they know what to look for and things of that nature. And they also, if you involve a hatchery, especially like in the Yukon River system, you could identify the run entry program of where also where it's in being intercepted too, because at DIPAC, just before I became a board member there, where Ladd McCauley was still alive, they invented a way to identify the specific fish from a specific area. Following the Japanese current, we've identified where it comes into icy straits or farther on down by Noyes Island, because they was easy to identify the fish at that point. So you could, you know, do a lot of different types of regulations on things like that, which is what, you know, in regards to either commercial fishing, sport fishing, and all this stuff, because you know where the fish are going to, where they belong, and who's catching them, you know. So I really do think that the first person who was commenting was talking about boxes for sockeye, and spawning channels, and I was involved in that too early on, where we were doing spawning channels on the Chilkat, and we also put in boxes and throughout the contributaries to the Chilkat River, and they have been very successful, you know, on doing that type of stuff. So it's pretty important that these other communities should do it, because once we start getting a large, you know, number of fish coming back on all these river systems that can handle it, you know, we will, as a state, do very well, not only in commercial fishing, but sport fishing and personal use fishing, too. Because it sounds like with this GM fish coming on out, is because salmon is starting to be very popular in the world and starting to sell. So they want to start making more money, so they want to do the genetic change on these fish now. So that means that we're really are becoming the number one place in the world. And we should, you know, as Alaskans, should consider it and improve it, you know. So that's it. And
thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. We appreciate it. Is there anyone else here that would like to testify? Seeing no others, I will close public testimony. And that brings it back before the committee. Is there any questions? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. And I'm just wondering, this would be for the department folks that are available either in the room or online. But just, you know, the one concern that's come up from folks is just making sure that an unqualified individual, you know, wouldn't get themselves into doing this work, and just, you know, as a idea of just how do we, you know, be careful with our wild salmon stocks. And so I just wanted to see if the department could respond to that a little bit, and sort of, you know, kind of outline who they think might be good to receive one of these permits.
Thank you. Representative Tallarico, do you have a department representative here? If you could come forward and identify yourself. For the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Sam Raybung. I'm the Statewide Aquaculture Planning and Permitting Section Chief for Commercial Fisheries Division, Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Thank you. If you could respond to Representative Tarr's.
Representative Tarr, through the chair. So we've read this bill, and we see that the provisions are pretty stringent, and the requirements are, in a nutshell, that it's designed not for amateurs. That all said, these permits would still be subject to our existing genetics policy, fish health policy, sustainable escapement goal policy, sustainable salmon fisheries policies, all the existing guidance that we have right now for all of our current permits. So nothing amateurish would be allowed to go forward. I can say that with certainty.
And as a follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. And with that in mind, then, do you see that the real opportunity here is, you know, sort of that there's more work that needs to be done in terms of, having more fish, you know, available, basically more hatchery work that needs to be done, but the state on its own isn't able to fully support all of that work, and this would be an opportunity to, you know, have essentially a public-private partnership, because all of the regulatory work would still be done at the state, but it will allow sort of some of those private dollars to infuse that system.
Representative Tarr, through the chair. There's nothing in this permit, in this bill, that would permit anything that we can't permit already. What I see it doing is, in actual practice, we take our fish resource permit bill, which is for scientific and educational objectives, and we craft these enhancement or restoration projects as research, researching the efficacy of this technique to restore salmon runs to this system. And so it's not real clean, and it is commissioner's authority to be able to do that. But I think what I read in this bill and hear from the supporters of the bill is they would prefer to have this clearly defined in statute as to we're able to do this. I don't expect a gold rush of applicants for new projects. I think these are going to all be well thought out. There's provisions in the bill that require a lot of pre-work before we could ever get to permitting. So these would only be done where stakeholders and the department deem it appropriate.
Okay.
Director, the million-dollar question, do you believe that you would have the funds to oversee this program in the department?
Madam Chair, we view this as a zero fiscal note because these are permits that we, a permitting category, a permitting type that we already process and permit. So what we envision happening would be permits that are applied for now under our existing fish resource permit permitting program would just, a portion of those would now be permitted with a different type directed towards restoration and enhancement. So we don't envision seeing a need for additional dollars. The bill requires the permit holder to be responsible for collecting the data. It's stakeholder-driven, user-pay approach, I believe.
Thank you. Are there any other questions?
One other
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. There's just one other concern that I was reading about our current fish and enhancement and hatchery development policy seeks to segregate wild fish from hatchery fish to avoid interbreeding, and then this one, I guess a concern that's been raised, wouldn't. But do you have any response to that?
Representative Tarr, through the chair. So the PNP, private nonprofit hatchery program, it's a different model altogether. It's large-scale fishery enhancement. That's designed to enhance fisheries. It's not designed to enhance fish populations. It's by definition, designed to produce additional harvestable surplus that's paid for by the commercial fleet, and the benefit is primarily derived to the commercial fleet. So we design those programs so that they are they have what we call terminal harvest areas, where the fish would return, where they're not going to interact, have significant interaction with natural spawning stocks. So this is a different model. This one would be what we would term rehabilitation or restoration projects as opposed to fishery enhancement. And these are designed to restore existing populations to a higher level of production that they may have had in the past and no longer do for whatever reason.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Pansler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, this one's maybe for the bill sponsor. I think we've just heard credible description of this as a rehabilitation situation. over enhancement, would you be opposed to a friendly amendment that would perhaps use the term rehabilitation instead of enhancement throughout?
Through the chair, this is Dave Tallarico, House District 6. I think it is rehabilitation. So I can always use some help, Representative Fansler. Thank you very much.
Perhaps after this, Madam Chair, through the chair, perhaps after this we can sit down and discuss something like that. That way it might be a more clear path to the citizens, have more transparency that shows us what we're actually intending to do or what you're actually intending to do with this bill, rather than perhaps linking it to something that might have a worse connotation out there in the public. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Christ-Tompkins.
Thank you. And I have a question for the department, actually, if that's possible.
It certainly is.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Ray Bung. Thanks for your testimony. Not to put it too bluntly, ma'am, appreciate your previous answers, but does the department support this bill?
Representative Christ-Tompkins, through the chair, the department is neutral on this bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Eastman.
It was just following a comment from Representative Fansler. In using the word rehabilitation, I wouldn't want to communicate to the department or miscommunicate to the department that we weren't for anything that would, in a helpful way, increase the maximum yield of the resources. Certainly, if we haven't seen in history fisheries where we want it to be, doesn't mean that we shouldn't try and get there. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Eastman. I'm sure Representative Fansler and Representative Tallarico will come up with something that is accommodating to all. Are there any other questions from this committee? Seeing none. Excuse me. I will hold this bill until further notice. And I appreciate it, and I appreciate all the testifiers. Thank you, Representative Tallarico. And as there is no further business to come before this committee, we will adjourn at about 11:17.